Hello and welcome. If you've ever launched an oral history project in a school, library, or community group, you know this. It's not the microphone that makes or breaks you. It's the paperwork, the trust, and whether what you record can actually be used a year from now, 5 years from now, and by people beyond your immediate team. Picture this. A high school class records World War II veterans. The stories are powerful. Everyone feels proud. The files go on to a teacher's personal drive with a promise to figure out the rest later. The teacher retires. The login vanishes. Families ask for copies. No proof of consent. A new teacher wants to use a clip. No documented rights. All that community memory becomes a digital attic with no door. That's why the first 30 days matter more than the next 300. The projects that survive don't always have fancy cameras or big grants. They nail trust, documentation, and usability from day one. The shift is simple. Design your documentation and consent from the community outward. Not from a template, not from a tech wish list. Start with the people who are sharing their memories and the people who will learn from them. First, consent. Consent isn't a signature. It's a relationship. If you remember one line today, let it be this. Consent is an ongoing conversation. Use plain language, 8th grade readable. Tell folks where their voice might live. Classroom, library website, exhibit, and whether you'll use AI tools to make transcripts. Then offer true choices. Public now, public later, classroom only, or family only. When people understand the options, they feel respected. Projects that offer real choices don't get fewer yeses. They get more. If students are involved, check district policies up front. Protect student information in transcripts and notes. If minors are narrators, get guardian consent and be explicit about public sharing. Many districts require an extra review before student-created content goes online. It's not red tape for the sake of it. It's care. If you're partnering with tribal nations or indigenous communities, pause any open-by-default mindset. Indigenous protocols and sovereignty come first. Some communities use platforms that honor cultural rules about who can see what and when. Think of consent not just as individual permission, but as community governance. Ask who benefits and who decides. When you honor that, trust grows and the stories come forward. Be trauma-informed. Local history holds pain alongside pride, displacement, discrimination, loss, environmental harm. Train interviewers to notice distress, offer breaks, and remind narrators they can skip or retract anything. Write that right to retract into your consent and your process. Safety isn't a nice to have, it's foundational. Capture the story well, but don't overthink the gear. Good technique beats expensive tech every time. Choose a quiet room. Put the mic close enough to catch a whisper. Do a test recording. Consistent, clean audio honors the person speaking and makes transcripts far more accurate. If all you have is a smartphone and a calm space, you're ahead of most. Here's the invisible layer that saves projects. Document rights and context inside the files, not just in a spreadsheet that will disappear. Add a clear rights statement. Who owns it, how it can be used, embargo dates, and who to contact down the road. If the recording mentions a home address or a traumatic event, flag that sensitivity. It's like tucking a note into the envelope with the letter, so it travels wherever the file goes. Let's talk metadata without scaring anyone. Metadata is just the map to your story. If a 4th grade teacher wants a clip about a railroad strike or the old water tower, how will they find it? Write a short, plain language summary. Tag the neighborhood, landmark, time period, and key topics. If you can, add a few timestamps to the most teachable moments. 2 or 3 points where something clickable and classroom ready happens. You don't need a museum database. You need to help a tired teacher on a Tuesday night find a story fast. Now connect those voices to the rest of your local history. The magic happens when an interview about the town's first factory links to a photo of the assembly line, a map of the neighborhood, and a newspaper clipping from opening day. Teachers can drop that bundle into a lesson tomorrow. Families can see their loved one's voice alongside artifacts they recognize. This is where museums, libraries, and schools shine together. Nobody has to do it all. Everybody brings a piece. You also need a plan for where the files live and who's responsible. The answer cannot be my personal Google Drive. Put your masters in a stable place your institution can manage. Your library server, a district paid repository, or a trusted state or regional archive. Keep safe copies in different places. Write down the person or office responsible and how to reach them. Decide what happens if that person changes jobs. Decide when embargoes lift and how to handle takedown requests. This unglamorous part turns good intentions into something future-proof. Please design for accessibility. At minimum, provide transcripts or captions so more people can participate. Students with different learning styles, elders who prefer reading, listeners in noisy homes. Transcripts also make your archive searchable. Double win. Let's get practical about team roles. You don't need a cast of thousands, but you do need clarity. Who is the project lead? Who handles consent and tracks forms? Who interviews? Who summarizes and tags stories? Who keeps files safe and backed up? Who represents the community's voice in decisions? A simple one-page agreement. School, library, museum, community leaders can save months of confusion. Spell out goals, timeline, and how you'll handle disagreements. Now you have a shared compass. Thinking, this is a lot for a small team? Start small on purpose. In the first month, do 3 interviews well. Use the flexible consent form with clear options. Capture clean audio. Write short summaries with classroom-friendly tags. Link each interview to one photo or map in your local collection. Publish one short clip with the narrator's permission and share it at a community event or a faculty meeting. Show, don't just tell, what a living archive looks like. Then ask partners what worked and what felt off. Iterate. There are trade-offs. A very restrictive release can protect narrators but make teaching harder. A very open release can reach more classrooms but deter some participants. Offering choices meets people where they are. In practice, many narrators are comfortable with educational use, even if they're not ready for full public access. Let them pick and document it clearly. Here are potholes you can avoid right now. Don't rely on verbal consent alone. Don't skip the rights conversation just because everyone seems friendly. Don't ignore Indigenous protocols in the name of openness. Don't bury your files in a single account only one person can access. Don't record 50 interviews with no plan to describe them. Better to have 10 that are beautifully documented and easy to teach with. And don't treat hard stories casually. Being trauma-informed builds trust that lasts. Worried structure will kill spontaneity? In my experience, the opposite. When people feel respected and safe, they open up. When teachers can search by neighborhood or landmark, they use the material. When families know where the archive lives and how to request changes, they participate more. The structure isn't a cage. It's a trellis. It helps stories climb and bloom. I'll leave you with 3 questions to guide your next step. 1. Who owns the recordings? How can they be used? And where is that written down in plain language? 2. How will a teacher or a teenager find a specific story by place, event, or topic 2 years from now? 3. If someone asks you to take something down or redact a part, do you know how you'll do it and who can authorize it? If you can answer those, you're already ahead of most projects I see. The full written guide digs into sample release language, ways to embed rights information in files, platform options for granular access controls, and tips for preserving your masters. Think of that as your toolkit. But the heart of this work isn't technical. It's relational. Align with your community's values. Give real choices. Make sure the stories you collect can be used, taught, and cared for over time. You don't need a perfect studio to build a living archive. You need trust, clear consent, simple summaries, and a plan for stewardship. Start small, start now. Let your first 3 interviews set a standard everyone can feel proud of. Thanks for listening. I can't wait to hear the stories your community will tell and how you'll make them easy for the next class, the next librarian, and the next family to find.